Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. All right, stop the presses. No, keep the presses rolling, because we have a Wall Street Journal columnist, Market Watch columnist, David Widener, on the program with us today to give us his special vantage point of all the things going on in the market and the economy. And so today's program is going to be about 8 hours. No, not really. It'll be our normal. See, I got him. I knew he was going to laugh. David Widener, welcome to the program.
Oh, Dave, thanks for having me.
It's my pleasure, and yeah. I meant every word of that because I'm super excited to have your perspective. David Widener, ladies and gentlemen, started his career as a newspaper reporter back in 1991, same year I started my career as a CPA, and has been working with different parts of Wall Street since 1998. He started with Market Watch, doing a column for them in 2008. He's won multiple awards. I think, as you tell me, you wallpapered, what, 3 or 4 bathrooms with all the awards?
All the awards that my kids will give me.
But including, all joking aside, 2 awards from the Associated Press for column writing and investigative reporting. So, and a regular contributor to Fox Business Network. Man, boy, that's quite a resume.
I sound busy, don't I?
You do. You do sound busy. But I'm very pleased to have you on the program, because I think that with everything going on Wall Street, and not on Wall Street, and behind the scenes, and all of that, the everyday retail investor and us regular folks out here, not on Wall Street, in the real world, we scratch our heads and go, what's going on? And so I thought you'd be able to give us some perspective, and we can, you know, we can kind of jump around on different topics, but the revolving door, as you put it, we can talk about Dell, some of what's happening there. So let's start wherever you'd like, but it's your insight I'm after, David. So start maybe with helping us understand some of this public versus private sector flip-flopping we see.
Well, I mean, that's really the essence, I think, Dave, of what confuses people. And, you know, we have a financial system that is really kind of a quasi-government system. You know, this idea that there's a public interest in the financial system. And that's why we had these bailouts in 2008.
Sure.
I mean, that's really when you get down to it, that's the essential reason. Had it been something like, you know, I don't know, making widgets, we wouldn't have seen the level of intervention. And of course, you know, banking and finance traditionally were a very regulated space. And we all know how the big banks, all banks really, you know, had to deal with all these different entities, the Federal Reserve, the Treasury Department, the FDIC, the OCC, all those alphabet soups. But the financial world has, in the last decade or 2 decades, has really become an incredible, it's grown exponentially and grown sort of outside the boundaries of those regulators.
So it's grown, it's kind of gotten, as we would say here in the South, too big for its britches, right?
So too big for anybody's britches.
Yeah.
And so it's evolved, and it's technology, and it's an industry that has become so much bigger than the people who are trying to keep it in check. And that's why we see so many blow-ups. And even as recently as last year with J.P. Morgan, one of considered one of the best-run banks, lost $6 billion. So on just a single trade, which tells you just how much we really don't know is going on out there.
Well, I think the question that is obvious to everyone is, okay, we hear about this, and thanks for confirming what we have been thinking and hearing and wondering, and this revolving door, this ever-increasing also size of the financial and how interrelated it is to the rest of the economy and all the other parts of the economy. How do we fix it? Or is it something that is not fixable, but more of a how do you adapt to it?
Yeah, if I can answer that
question.
That's
why I said it was an 8-hour program, David.
Yeah, well, if I can answer that question, elect me to Congress or something,
yeah.
Because look, I think what's happening is kind of a piecemeal adaptive approach.
Okay.
And you know, what they're trying to do is tackle all of the details, all of the symptoms, you know, with financial reform back in 2010, the Dodd-Frank Act. That thing is, you know, I think the original Glass-Steagall Act was something like 30 pages. And I think the Dodd-Frank Act is well over, I may be wrong with this number, but I believe it's over 700 pages, which tells you a lot about the way the industry has changed, but also about how they've approached it. You know, Glass-Steagall essentially split the investment banks and the banks, and, you know, that only worked for about 70 years. So they repealed that, and of course, we had this period of deregulation, and now they've come back, and they're trying to regulate all these little different parts of the business, and that's creating a tremendous problem. You know, how it's implemented, there's fights all over Capitol Hill, there's fights on Wall Street about how this should be done. You know, there's tremendous pressure from the industry. There's pressure from consumers. This is just a lot to take in. People like you and me have been following this stuff for a long time, and even the most seasoned, informed people are still
scratching their head.
Yeah, they're at a loss.
Well, and I think the fundamental problem, and again, I don't want to oversimplify this, is just very difficult to put the toothpaste back in the tube.
That's right.
And, you know, it's going to take a lot of work, but I'm always an optimist, but I got to be realistic about things, and I'm not sure that it can really be, you know, it's reached a critical mass, and it may be that it's more of, as you said earlier, something that we have to work with, deal with, adapt to, but is not going to really fundamentally be changed.
Right. David, when you're talking about risk-taking, which is what investment really is,
right?
There's a certain, you can only plan for and strategize and minimize risk to a certain degree, and at some point you're going to have to hope for luck, and it's really always been that way.
Well, you know what it is? One of the things I always tell people is if you've got financial assets, they're in the financial system, and there's always going to be some element of risk in the financial system.
That's right.
Let's do this, David. Hold that thought. I want to take a quick break. We'll come back. David Widener, ladies and gentlemen, is our guest, MarketWatch columnist, and we'll be right back after this short break.
Are you gambling with too much money invested in the stock market? How can you tell? It's simple. The rule of 100. Take your age and subtract it from 100. The result is how much you might want to keep in the market. The rest should be off the table, invested in something safe. Every rule has an exception, but the rule of 100 is a good starting point to determine if your portfolio is out of balance. Holland Financial is ready to help. Call 888-747-PLAN to schedule your free consultation or visit us at davidholland.com.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. David Widener and I are talking about the nature of the market and the economy and the ever-increasing complexity of financial services and the inherent nature of risk in that system. And, David, I'd love for us to, if you could, for us to talk a little bit about one of the examples, I think, of some of the, I don't know if you want to call it odd behavior or things that are a little bit, that may defy logic, and that is this bidding war that has emerged, or this big discussion and activity about Dell. You know, it wasn't that long ago, Dell was kind of just out there, nothing much going on, wasn't that exciting, not much really being said, and other than that PC sales are falling off and they're a victim of that, and then all of a sudden they're all over the place. What's to make of that?
Yeah, six months ago, Dell was sort of slogging along under the, you know, Michael Dell came back to the company, was sort of slogging along, and, you know, the idea for investors, well, this is a long-term play, it's not a growth company, yada, yada, yada. And so all of a sudden, you know, Michael Dell and this group decide to take it private, you know, basically buy out shareholders and take the company private. And suddenly, you know, all these developments, suddenly everybody is interested in Dell. You've got Blackstone Group, which of course is now dropping its bid, but you had other interested parties as well: Carl Icahn, Silver Lake Partners, which ended up teaming up with Mr. Dell himself, and then there was Southeastern Asset Management, and, you know, this whole thing. Suddenly, Dell is like the hottest stock on Wall Street. You know, but fundamentally, the company has not changed,
right?
But the interest in it.
That's the story.
That's exactly it. And so you wonder, so suddenly the investor is faced with a question, you know, what are we to make of all these bids? Is Dell really undervalued? Are they trying to bid up the price because of their own holdings or maybe one of their clients' holdings? Grudge match? You know, Carl Icahn has been in plenty of grudge matches. You don't know if there's personalities that are involved here.
Sure.
So the investor is suddenly really stuck with trying to figure out what's going on. My intuition tells me, or, you know, an experience tells us, that Dell is probably the same company it was 3 months ago.
Right.
But what's happening is the Wall Street power play. And this is dangerous territory for people. They can get caught in the middle. And we see what's happening with Dell today, now that Blackstone is, you know, signaling that it, you know, it's not interested anymore. And that's the case for, you know, a lot of these deals that we see these days. You know, David Einhorn versus Apple, or Bill Ackman versus Herbalife, you know.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of these stories are not about the companies themselves. They're about whatever holdings those fund managers have, trying to push the price in a direction where they can get out with a profit. And I think it's very tough for investors to sit there and sift through what really is happening with those companies. And look, investing today is it's a full-time job.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. I have a CFA, Chartered Financial Analyst, that works for me, David, and that is all he does all day long.
Yeah.
And he manages our clients' accounts. And, it's a full-time task.
Right, right. And I think that, this is all legitimate stuff. People are certainly entitled to, make bids for companies for
whatever reason.
If the shareholder can end up getting a nice premium as a result, that's called fiduciary duty. And
that's shareholder
right
value
thing.
Is what it's all about.
That's the right thing. But sometimes it's very difficult to see whether people are genuinely interested.
Or if it's a game.
Or if it's a game. And that's the thing that still frustrates me after all these years.
I tell you what it feels like to me, and that's a very non-quantitative way of looking at it. It feels like a kind of a takeaway method. That's what it feels like. The whole thing feels like it's like, well, we're going to, the public doesn't see the value in this company. Therefore, we're going to take it private where we can then do these things and then the value will be perceived.
Right.
Anyway.
And again, nothing wrong with that,
correct.
I suppose. Maybe they feel like they're getting it on the cheap and et cetera, et cetera. And maybe it is a wake-up call to the marketplace, to say, hey, you're undervaluing this company. But, again, it's very difficult to tell.
And I think the key thing, the message to our listeners is, at the end of the day, you always got to look at the fundamentals of the company. You have to not ignore, but kind of push away or separate all this hype and talk and look at the fundamentals, as you said, and it's the same company it was 3 to 6 months ago. Let's do this, David. Let's take a break. When we come back, I'd love to get your take on social networking as it relates to the SEC and companies being able to release information that way. So stay tuned, ladies and gentlemen. We'll be right back.
There are hundreds of annuities available in today's marketplace. How can you know if one is right for you? Certified financial planner David Holland answers this question and more in his educational booklet on annuities. To get your free copy, call Holland Financial at 888-747-PLAN. The annuity booklet provides a plain English explanation of the different types of annuities so you can decide if one is a good fit for your situation. Again, that number is 888-747-7526.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. David Widener's on the program with us today. He writes for Market Watch, and the name of his column is The Writing on the Wall, and that's what we're talking about, is that wall that is written on all the time. And one of the things that's now being written, which is not on the wall, it's actually out there in internet digital space, and that's the social networking capability now of SEC did an announcement back at the beginning of April of 2013 that said that it would allow companies to disclose information on their social networking sites. And I had to have, this is one of the questions I wanted to get David's take on. Does this make sense to you?
This to me, these regulators are often accused of being one step behind the industries that they cover.
Right.
In this case, I'm worried that they may be a step ahead.
Yeah.
And simply because, the typical investor has their sources. And let's remember, before we begin talking about it, let's remember how important public information on a company is to investors and how sacred it is. And we've seen all the insiders trading scandals of the last couple of years. So information is key. And what the SEC basically did was say, hey, if you're a company and you have some information, it's okay to release it on social networks such as Facebook and Twitter. And I kind of understand the democracy of that, allowing sort of people, this is the way people access information these days. But, Dave, it's not the way that everybody accesses information these days. And I know a lot of investors, especially older investors, who, are still working without computers and internet connections and that sort of thing. And I just wonder if maybe this is going too far. Twitter is I think we're all still trying to figure that thing out, trying to figure out how it works and what we should be paying attention to, and
exactly
and how to sort through the stuff and Facebook just as well. And people can be overwhelmed with the amount of information there. So I'm worried, especially when you have people like, this seems to be more the purview of people like Charlie Sheen and Kim Kardashian, as I put in my column, than it is like XYZ public company. And
there's a risk, though. Here, isn't there? Here's a risk. The risk is you're really, you know, there's already concerns in our culture and our media sources. And there's this general concern that, you know, you have people that have access to things that other people don't have access to. Aren't we creating, by this kind of move, aren't we kind of creating a almost like a bubble that if you're not in the bubble and you aren't in the tweetosphere, if you're not tuned into all that, that you're kind of, you know, it's almost like a separate, I don't want to go too far, but it's almost like a separate class of society you create.
Yeah, I think so. I think there's a certain kind of person who's on Facebook and Twitter and who's reading it religiously and looking for information that way. And I think that also those many of those people are not attuned to, look, we've seen so many frauds on Twitter. I mean, you know, the Queen of England is dead, you know, so-and-so, you know, brought a gun into a school or whatever the crazy headline may be. And we see the misinformation spread like wildfire, especially on market news. You know, your listeners may know Doug Cass, who's done some CNBC and that sort of thing. And he put out, you know, Apple's going to split its stock. I heard a birdie told me. Yeah. And, oh, boy, you know, didn't everybody just completely flip out with that? And for the next, you know, 5 hours was trying to track it down, and Apple's denying it. And so you can imagine if the FCC legitimizes this as a place where information, company information can be disseminated, you have to wonder, I mean, even if it's true, are people going to take it seriously? I don't think that this medium is ready for prime time when it comes to important disclosures.
It's almost like you're creating, you know, it's all about public information, but we don't want private information. We don't want insider trading. We don't want to have all that, but it's almost like a blend of the public and private together. It's like only certain people, and you've got it's a lot of hoops to jump through. I don't know. Something about it, I don't like it either.
And too many rumors, and most of them wrong.
Exactly. Let's do this, David. I want to take one more break, and we come back. One of my favorite things I wanted to ask you about is hedge fund managers and that whole area. So stay right there, ladies and gentlemen. We'll be right back.
Sometimes I know what I want to say, but just can't find the words.
Last week, I shouted at my grandson, and I'm not sure why.
I saw my daughter, but couldn't remember her name.
The sooner you recognize the warning signs of Alzheimer's disease, the sooner you can do something about it. To learn more, go to alz.org/10signs. That's alz.org/10signs. A message from the Alzheimer's Association.
And we are back. David Wider is our guest, MarketWatch columnist, and he's in the know. He's watched this for a long time. And David, I got to ask you, because of your perspective, there's a lot of mixed feelings or thoughts about hedge fund managers, and they, of course, grab the headlines whenever they do something crazy or interesting or ridiculous. And so help us, you know, give us a perspective on that industry and what they're doing.
Well, for a while there, hedge fund, if you weren't invested in a hedge fund, you were kind of ashamed at the cocktail party, right? You wanted to say, oh, I've got so X amount of dollars with my hedge fund manager, and everybody looked at you admiringly.
Yeah.
And of course, you know, over the last 5 years, they you know, with the Bernie Madoffs of the world using hedge fund protections to hide their schemes, you know, it's not quite the glamorous.
Now it's like, what are you doing?
Yeah, exactly.
right.
So. But I think you know, for most investors, the key thing to know is that chances are, if you're with a hedge fund, you're probably just going to have returns that match the market.
Well, the fees are high.
And that's a big part of it. You know, we talk about 2 and 20.
2 and 20.
2% of assets and 20% of gains. I mean,
that's expensive.
Look at your portfolio and see what that costs every year.
Right.
I mean, it's pretty significant. You know, but these hedge funds have great allure, but they don't have the performance to back it up. And part of the problem is with my profession, the media, and that is we trump up the big wins.
Yeah.
So a guy like John Paulson, who made incredible bets and great bets, I mean, great investments, betting against housing in 2007 and 2008, he made a couple billion dollars on it. I mean, he looked fantastic. My friend and colleague Greg Zuckerman wrote a book about him called The Greatest Trade Ever. What's happened to John Paulson recently? Well, he's gone heavy into gold, and he is getting absolutely clobbered.
Yeah.
He has lost, I think the latest number was $1.6 billion on that bet this year. So these guys are fallible. These guys are always working an angle. And it's and the biggest problem is that, of course, they don't fall under even the limited amount of rules that other investment managers fall under.
It's a wild, wild west.
It is a wild, wild west. It's completely opaque. You cannot. It's a black box. Some hedge fund managers disclose quite a bit. Others disclose nothing. And you don't know if you're with Bernie Madoff or with, Warren Buffett. And
well, that's perfect way to sum it up right there, David. We're out of time, but we are going to have you back because you're just a wealth of information. And MarketWatch.com, ladies and gentlemen, David Widener, MarketWatch columnist. Thanks again, David, for being on the program.
Oh, my pleasure.
All right. We'll do it again soon.
Looking forward to it. Yeah.
Want to learn more about Real Money with David Holland? Visit us at realmoneyradio.com, where you can listen live or to the archives. You can also email us your questions, comments, or show ideas to info@realmoneyradio.com. Be sure to like us on Facebook at Real Money with David Holland, and keep up with Scott Connor by following us on Twitter at Real Money Radio.
Remember, nobody cares more about your money than you do. This has been Real Money with David Holland. Thank you for listening.